Question of Balance with your host, Ruth Coplin. In the first hour of the show, we ask questions that matter, discussing topics with local relevance and global significance. And now, here's your host for It's a Question of Balance, Ruth Coplin.
Welcome to the show. I hope you've had a good week. If you're a new listener, I'd like to let you know that in the first hour of It's a Question of Balance, we avoid politics, which often instantly polarizes people. And instead, we look at timeless issues underlying current events, politics, and our daily lives. And I interview people on the street on a different topic each week. And in this way, I hope we gain insights or perhaps become inspired to think about things differently or clarify what we really feel. And then in the second hour, we balance the intellectual with the creative by featuring in-depth interviews with highly talented guests from the arts. And in the second hour, I'm pleased to be interviewing stand-up comedian and comedy writer Sadia Azmat, known for her forthright observational comedy about her experiences as a British Muslim woman and also cross-cultural issues about race and religion. Sadia has appeared at comedy clubs and festivals around Britain, as well as contributing writing to British newspapers. So that's coming up in the second hour. In this hour, we're considering, are we medicalizing normal? I've been out and about getting opinions on the street to get us thinking. Perhaps as you listen, you can wonder how you would have responded to the questions had I stopped you. Well, first this week, I spoke to Heather and Ray. Hello, my name's Ruth Coplin from It's a Question of Balance radio show. Thank you for agreeing to being interviewed. What are your names?
My name is Ray.
My name's Heather.
Well, thanks, Ray and Heather, for stopping for our Out and About feature. And this week, our topic is, are we medicalizing normal? Obviously, there's a need to help people with serious mental issues that are impeding their life and or causing harm to others. But excluding these cases, there are a whole range of disorders that have sprung up that represent behavior that used to be absorbed into normal life. In his book, The Book of Woe, The DSM and the Unmaking of Psychiatry, psychotherapist of 30 years Gary Greenberg states, when the American Psychiatric Association's Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, or DSM, was first published, there were 14 mental disorders, and now there are 250. It needs to scale back. So I'm wondering, are you aware of kind of an expanding list of mental ailments and conditions that seem to be medicalizing what used to be kind of within the range of normal?
I didn't realize it had gone up that much. I guess it makes me wonder, like, is it that they're making that many more kinds of behaviors, like, a disorder, or is it more just that they're, like, specializing within, like, groups of, like, oh, this is this specific, if that makes any sense?
Yes.
Like, it's more just subcategories.
Right. I think it probably might be a bit of both, but whether, even if it is doing that, it's still breaking down human behavior into, you know, analyzing it at a level that perhaps wasn't seen previously. I'm wondering if you sort of, that's something you see, experience in your normal life at all, or not something you've really thought about?
I mean, I know that, like, you know, kids at school, like, can get labeled with different, like, disorders, whether it's, like, a learning condition or, like, an emotional whatever, and then, you know, like, words that we didn't have, like, 20 years ago.
Right.
And
yeah,
it can be helpful, so they can get help, but also it can be harmful because then people get stigmatized.
Yeah, yeah. What about you? Are you aware of an expanding list of ailments and conditions? Do you feel we are medicalizing normal?
Yeah, I'm somewhat aware of it. I didn't know, as you said, like, how drastic it is, but I feel like definitely we kind of, like, over-medicate just, like, when we don't need to. Like, I have a friend that got, like, put on, like, an ADD medicine where he just had, like, something that shouldn't have, and it, like, made him freak out. So I think, I don't know, there's definitely, like, it's super easy nowadays, I think, to get drugs, and just, I think it's kind of messing us up a little bit. So, yeah, that's what I think.
It's interesting you should mention that, because one thing American psychiatrist Alan Francis is very concerned about is the increasing diagnosis of children
with psychiatric disorders. Helen Goldberg, writing in Spiked, states, take attentive deficit hyperactivity disorder, or ADHD, which Francis states is spreading like wildfire. This diagnosis is applied so promiscuously that an amazing 10% of kids now qualified. And interestingly, in the US, boys born in December are 70% more likely to be diagnosed with ADHD than boys born in January. And the reason diagnosing it is so problematic is that essentially it's a description of immaturity, including symptoms such as lack of impulse control, hyperactivity, or inattention. Boys born in December tend to be the youngest in their school group in the US, and thus they're more likely to be immature. And in the UK, the youngest children in a school classroom are born in August. So in Britain, August-born kids are more likely to be diagnosed with ADHD. Yeah, so Francis says basically we've medicalized immaturity. And so I'm wondering, I mean, you brought it up. Are you more aware of children being diagnosed with mental conditions? I know you mentioned it earlier and said sometimes it can be helpful.
I think for certain kids it can be helpful, kids who are like really far on the end of the spectrum, but for the ones that are more in the middle, in that like gray area, yeah, I could see there being a over diagnosing of that.
Yeah, and I think also with ADHD, I mean, the book Ritalin Nation talked about how we're hyper-stimulated now, and so the premise in that book is that a lot of the issue is more to do with this hyperstimulation, which when it's removed, it's like kids don't know what to do with themselves, and so they're kind of looking, you know, they seem very hyperactive just because they're looking for more stimulation. So that is a more of a sort of symptom of a way of life than perhaps a mental condition. Is that something you've thought about with these disorders with kids, of whether something that, again, that is more like just behavior is being medicalized?
I hadn't thought about that before, but it makes sense.
According to The Telegraph, despite an attempted cleanup in recent years by the American Psychiatric Association, 67% of the task force members responsible for DSM-5, which is this psychiatric diagnostic manual, are reported to have industry links. So I'm wondering what your thoughts are on the increasing use of drugs to treat emotional and psychological conditions, and whether the pharmaceutical and medical industries are influencing how diagnosis and treatment of mental health is being approached.
I think that's interesting. I think it could be happening, not to the point of it being, I don't think the doctors would be being immoral. And what am I trying to say? I could see like the pharmaceutical companies like putting pressure on like whatever associations are choosing like what counts as like being diagnosed as ADHD and like what doesn't need to be medicated. Yeah. And like maybe not having a direct influence, but you know, just that indirect pressure of like if you're in a gray area and you don't really know what you want to say, you have pressure coming from this side, so might as well just go with that.
I mean, I remember seeing for the first time a commercial over here for a certain drug I won't mention the name of, but it was basically sort of saying, are you shy at parties? Do you find it difficult to talk to people? Take this drug. And I was like, whoa, or speak to this, speak to your doctor about this drug, you know. And in Britain, it's illegal to advertise drugs. You know, at all.
Prescription drugs?
Yes. So,
you know, that would make sense.
So it's this kind of sense that the issues that we might have had, like you might be a bit shy, is that really like a medical condition, or is that just part of who you are as a unique human being? What are your thoughts on
that? That's definitely, I think, the way that someone might be. It's definitely not something that you should be medicated for. Like, people are different, and whether you're like the life of the party or someone who's shy, like shies away and just like, for me personally, I'm not really the life of the party. I just like to talk like with maybe one person in the like kind of like the back of the main like where the party is going on. So yeah, it's just I think it's definitely people are trying to give people drugs because I don't know, they'll just get paid more, and I don't know, it's kind of corrupt. It seems corrupt to me.
Do you think as a society we're less tolerant of eccentricity than perhaps we used to be? Do you feel a pressure to conform, you know, to a certain way of being?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely a pressure to conform. I don't know if that's any less than it was.
Right, yeah.
Like in the past.
Yeah.
I'm pretty young.
That's true.
Yeah, there's definitely like social rules that if you don't follow them, you get like punished, you know, so either by like people thinking you're weird or just like avoiding you or whatever.
I mean, do you think there's an increasing sense of rather than, well, actually, you can't say increasing, as you pointed out, you're young, but do you think there's a sense of if someone is a bit different to normal, you do tend to think, oh, there might be something wrong with them rather than they're just kind of different?
Yeah, I think that's a thought that like pops into people's heads. But I also think like since there's so much like language around like mental health these days too, like just the fact that we're aware, like we might be more likely to put a label on someone, but also might be more likely to understand what that means.
Yeah. I mean, I think with all these things, the pendulum seems to swing, you know, from one end to the other, because I think mental health issues were so stigmatized, and I think it's really good that we're able to talk about them more, but then it does seem perhaps we're going to this other extreme of, like, you know, making mental health issues out of things that perhaps, you know, are just normal things that one has to try and address as a human being.
Yeah.
So, would you would agree with that?
Yeah. I just wanted to say something.
Yeah.
It's like, I feel like putting a label on someone nowadays can, like, kind of, like, give someone the okay to, like, just act differently. Like, oh, you have ADD, so it's okay to, like, do this. Mm. And you are in need of medication. So, like, then they naturally think it's okay to, like, act a certain way, whereas if we didn't really have medication or like the chance to like the drug in the first place, and like they would have been just more prone to like overcoming their maybe somewhat not disability but just like their difference about them or whatever, like on their own or just with other people's help or with help of God just helping them get through it and stuff. And I think definitely, I don't know, I experienced a kid this summer that was like, he had ADHD and he was told like, you're different and you're special. So he like, he definitely let himself go crazy, like more than if I think he never was, like if he was just treated as a normal kid, he probably would have been able to handle himself a little better. But I don't know if that makes sense at all. Kind of, I don't know if that has to do with your question, but it was just on my mind, sort of, so.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, it's a complex issue, and there obviously are some people who definitely, you know, need help with mental health issues, but there's been an increasing sense from psychiatrists, you know, sort of within the field, that it's just going a bit too far, and, you know, how everything is becoming sort of medicalized. Well, I really appreciate your thoughts. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. What's your name?
Ruth.
Ruth, nice to meet you.
You too.
Oh, yeah. Of course. It was a pleasure getting interviewed by you, Ruth. So.
Great. Thank you.
Good luck with your interviews.
Thank you.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Coplin, and my on-the-street conversations. We're going to a break now, but I'll be back with more conversation after these messages.
Like the music from It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copland? Have you ever wondered what the full songs sound like? Now you can find out by listening to the new EP, It's a Question of Balance Music, available from iTunes, Amazon, and itsaquestionofbalance.com.
It just goes nowhere.
It's a Question of Balance music. Download individual tracks or the whole EP from iTunes, Amazon, or itsaquestionofbalance.com.
Hi, I'm Casey, and I'm the second generation owner of Bookshop Santa Cruz. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore and have been located in the heart of downtown Santa Cruz for over 47 years. We feature an extensive selection of new and used books, children's books and toys, gifts, cards, magazines, and games. Our knowledgeable booksellers can help you find just the right book or gift. We hope you can join us for our author events each week, featuring best-selling authors and books of local interest. And if you can't get downtown, our website has over 3.2 million titles, which ship directly to your home. We even have experts on site to help you publish your own book or family history. Come visit us downtown or at our website, bookshopsantacruz.com. Welcome back. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my conversations with people on the street. I hope the interviews are giving you some food for thought. The next person who spoke to me was Casey. So let's hear his thoughts.
Hello, my name's Ruth Copland from It's a Question of Balance radio show. Thanks for agreeing to being interviewed. What's your name?
My name's Casey.
Well, thanks for stopping, Casey, for our Out and About feature. And this week we're looking at, are we medicalizing normal? Drapetomania was a supposed mental illness described by American physician Samuel A. Cartwright in 1851 that caused black slaves to flee captivity. His feeling was that with the proper medical advice, strictly followed, this troublesome practice that many Negroes have of running away can be almost entirely prevented. Whilst this sounds preposterous to us now, psychotherapist Alan Greenberg feels that the disorder might well have made it into the American Psychiatric Association's Diagnostic and Statistical Manual had it existed at the time, noting that homosexuality was listed in the DSM as a sociopathic personality disorder until 1973. Greenberg says that by trying to use a pseudoscientific model to understand and treat our hopelessly complex inner world, we are creating a charade of non-existent disorders. I mean, obviously there are some people with serious mental issues who do need help, but are you aware of an expanding list of mental ailments and conditions that seem to be medicalizing normal?
I don't think anything surprises me that gets put on the DSM at this point. I mean, everything from homosexuality to simple as ADHD, I think that people are just kind of trying to put a label on what they don't understand about different people's personalities. If you're different, suddenly you have a disorder, and it doesn't really make much sense.
Right. In the new Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, there's a whole new chapter on obsessive compulsive and related disorders, and one of these is hoarding disorder. And this description given is as follows. Hoarding disorder is characterized by the persistent difficulty discarding or parting with possessions, regardless of the value others may attribute to these possessions. The behavior usually has harmful effects, emotional, physical, social, financial, and even legal, for the person suffering from the disorder and family members. For individuals who hoard, the quantity of their collected items sets them apart from people with normal collecting behaviors. Gary Greenberg is unimpressed, saying, is an eccentric old man living amid his junk sicker than a billionaire who is always thinking of the next way to make a buck? However, David Matte Coles in Psychiatric News quotes the case of a severe hoarder who, because of her hoarding behavior, lost custody of her child and may face eviction from her home and even imprisonment. So I'm wondering, do you think as a society we've become less tolerant of different ways of being and, you know, even eccentricities such as extreme hoarding, or is this sense being driven more by the medicalization of behaviors?
I think with hoarding in particular, it comes down to the issue of we haven't taught each other as a society how to deal with change well enough. I think it strikes an emotional chord with people when you're asked to throw something away because it connects. And I think that there's something about the way that our neural pathways tend to program and associate with memories that causes a strong emotional reaction and almost a physical pain to get rid of that. I think that we need to take the time to really understand that and start looking within ourselves, not just other people, because, you know, someone that we say is a hoarder or has OCD or has whatever,
If you don't have that disorder, quote unquote disorder, you're not going to understand it. It's all hypothetical, from my opinion. So I think that, you know, when it comes to that kind of thing, it's just more of an issue of how do we deal with change as individuals? How do we deal with change as a society? And I think that really is what some of the psychiatric discussion should be more geared towards.
Right. That's very interesting, because it seems to me that a lot of these disorders, in inverted commas, like hoarding, are actually symptoms of something else. They're a coping mechanism for anxiety or whatever. And so I think, you know, what you're saying is very interesting, is you need to go back and perhaps look at the source of why that person is doing that behavior, rather than saying, oh, you have a mental illness of hoarding. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think that most things that we consider to be mental illness is just that. It is more of a symptom than the cause, and what comes down to the cause of it is a lot more spiritual and existential, in my opinion. And I think that we need to take the time as beings to kind of analyze and say, you know, what does it mean to be human, and how do we cope with being human? Because being human is difficult.
Yes.
And I think that we don't teach our younger generations how to be human well enough, and that's what causes a lot of this issue.
Do you think as a society we pressure people to conform to certain boundaries and ways of being?
I definitely think that as a society we pressure people to conform to certain ways of being. Again, I think it goes back to the fact that we just don't really understand it. We kind of have these ideals of how we personally should be. For instance, like if I think that I should be a certain way, I might not understand it if somebody else is different, and it might cause me to judge them. But I have to be consciously aware every time that I do that and say, I recognize that this person is different, and that's the only reason that I'm, you know, acting out or having any kind of negative feeling.
Right.
But
well, thank you so much for your opinions. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my On the Street conversations. Next up were Jeff and Fran. Let's hear their thoughts.
Hello, my name's Ruth Copland from It's a Question of Balance radio show. Thank you for agreeing to being interviewed. What are your names?
Fran.
Jeff.
Well, thanks, Fran and Jeff, for stopping for our Out and About feature. And this week we're considering, are we medicalizing normal? Obviously, there's a need to help people with serious mental issues that are impeding their life and or causing harm to others. But excluding these cases, there are a whole range of disorders that have sprung up that represent behavior that used to be absorbed into normal life. The DSM, or Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, is the book used by psychiatrists to track and describe mental disorders and conditions. And in her article, Saving Normal in a World Gone Mad, Helen Goodberg reveals how American psychiatrist Alan Francis was chair of the task force that created the DSM-4, but he's now one of the most prominent critics of DSM-5, and he has a book called Saving Normal, An Insider's Revolt Against Out-of-Control Psychiatric Diagnosis, DSM-5, Big Pharma, and the Medicalization of Ordinary Life. And he puts forward the dangers of inflating psychiatric conditions and how psychiatry is stepping way beyond the bounds of its competence. So I'm just wondering, do you have any sense of there being an increasing medicalization of everyday human experience?
I think it's a pretty complicated conversation. I think that on one hand, there are slight variations of normal that get turned into diseases or disorders. Like there's a whole spectrum of attention deficit problems, or the entire autism spectrum. I mean, goes from just barely off of the perfectly normal range to people with really severe problems. And I think that on one hand, yes, it's problematic to turn someone who's just slightly different from the norm into someone who has a disease or a problem. On the other hand, for people who need help and maybe don't have the financial resources to pay for help, if they get a diagnosis, then there often are resources then that the state can provide to help people. I have friends with a young child who's on the autism spectrum, and he gets a tremendous number of services from the state and the county that he wouldn't get otherwise, and they wouldn't be able to afford otherwise. So it's really a it's kind of a double-edged sword, and I guess I have mixed feelings about it.
Right, yeah. Do you have any thoughts on whether you feel, I mean, if you don't mind me saying, you're a little older, and so in your...
One is long, yeah, certainly.
In your experience, do you feel that there are more medical, you know, mental conditions now than when you were younger?
I don't know if there are more or that we're just recognizing them. I was a teacher for 30-some years, and I saw a lot of kids with a lot of problems, and I think it's I think it's fine that, you know, at least they're getting recognized and hopefully care, yeah, that they need.
Yeah.
I think that one issue maybe that's tangential to this is that mental illness is so highly stigmatized in our culture that, you know, to give someone a diagnosis of some kind of mental disorder, if we did not have the stigma that we have, it might be really beneficial. Mm. It's hard to tell. But certainly, you know, from my mom's perspective of seeing kids who have attention problems or behavior issues, if everybody's expected to conform to, you know, a narrower range of normal, and there's not a wider range to allow for different teaching methods or different classes or different programs, maybe we need a different way of looking at it. You know, maybe the concept of normal just needs to be expanded much more so than it was, say, when I was a kid, where everyone was expected to behave exactly the same.
Right. That wasn't. Yeah. I mean, one of the things this psychiatrist, Francis, is very concerned about is the increasing diagnosis of children with psychiatric disorders. And he states, we failed to predict or prevent 3 new false epidemics of mental disorder in children: autism, attention deficit, and childhood bipolar disorder. And we did nothing to contain the rampant diagnostic inflation that was already expanding the boundary of psychiatry far beyond its competence. And I think one of the things he is saying is that a lot of the science around psychiatry is in a way pseudoscience, and he's a psychiatrist, you know, that a lot of it is deciding what range of behavior constitutes normal, and then, like what you're saying, you know, you make it very narrow, and then a lot of people are falling outside that. At the same time, one of the reasons for all these codes is what you brought up at the beginning. I mean, even if you can afford to pay for help, you won't get it through your medical insurance, and yet, right, unless you have a DSM diagnostic code.
Right.
And so there's, I think, also a sense of sort of cynicism about, you know, is it being a lot of these things created purely so, you know, people can just use the medical system? I don't know if that's something you've thought about at all.
Yeah, I think about it quite a bit. My wife is a child psychologist, and we have conversations about this all the time, and about hopefully our own future children, and just our own friends and our own, you know, lives, how we fall within normal or not normal. I mean, psychiatry used to pathologize homosexuality,
exactly,
and now no longer does. It's interesting how our concepts of normal are so culturally based. I haven't done a lot of reading on this, but I mean, I don't think the diagnosis of ADHD is nearly as common in Europe. But I also think they have a very different educational system that allows for,
yeah,
a broader range of behaviors and the various strengths that kids have. So,
yes, yeah.
And it all kind of feeds back on itself, doesn't it? Our,
yeah,
insurance system and our medical system and our, yeah, culture, and yeah, it's,
well,
it's a big conversation.
If I can find my research, there, I think it's 67% of the people on the board for the DSM have some industry links. And so some people have wondered whether that might be skewing how the DSM is being constructed.
Right.
So, I mean, that's certainly a concern.
There's conversations now also, there are lots of medications being developed to enhance cognitive abilities and enhance memory and enhance focus, mm, for people who definitely fall within normal ranges of, mm, performance, but they want a boost because they want to get a raise or they want to be the next Einstein,
yeah,
or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So that's even beyond the idea of pathologizing people and using medication to just enhance our own abilities. So it's, I think we're, I'm glad you're doing this conversation, because I think that there's a lot to talk about that we don't talk about very well.
And I think, you know, in some ways, I think it's a good thing. I have a background in psychotherapy, and, you know, you talked about the stigmatization of mental illness, and, you know, I think that dealing with psychological and emotional issues is really enriching to your life. And if we could think of it in a more positive way, we don't even need to think about it as an illness. It's just part of being human.
Right.
And if we could see it more like that, I mean, obviously there's some people on the spectrum who really need help, you know, but for most of us, you know, we go through all these different things. Our life is difficult. We struggle. Right. And that's part of being human. And it, I think if we could be more positive about that experience rather than, you know, having to give it names and medicalize it, that would be more helpful, in my opinion. I don't know what you think.
I agree. And also I'm thinking of a friend of mine who was struggles with a serious case of bipolar, and I think that there's so much cynicism about the medical industry and psychiatry that people don't trust that there's actually a disease there, especially here in the Bay Area, where everybody, you know, is into such alternative treatments, that there's a mistrust of science, I think, because of the abuses of the medical system and past abuses in psychiatry. So there's definitely some repair work to be done.
Well, yes, definitely.
Well, I think also what I was saying earlier about it being a sort of pseudoscience, you know, a lot of these things, it's impossible to actually, you can't diagnose somebody and say, yes, you have this chemical imbalance in your brain to this degree, and therefore you should take this drug at this amount. Most of it is guesswork and experimentation. It's like, well, you have to, these symptoms, and we think this might help, take this amount, and then we'll see what happens.
Right.
And yet it's presented in a way that's much more concrete and paternalistic than that. And I think maybe that's something to be thought about as well. I don't know what you think about that.
I agree. I'm glad you're having the conversation.
Thank you. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate your opinions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you. Good luck.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my On the Street Conversations. We're going to a break now, but I'll be back with more after these messages.
Ciao, I'm Luca from Tramonti at 528 Seabright Avenue, steps from the ocean. We are the authentic Italian pizza and pasta restaurant, serving also organic salad and house-made desserts in a friendly family-style atmosphere, indoor or on our lovely patio.
Tramonti is open every day from noon to 9 and later on Fridays and Saturdays. Come enjoy our specials every Tuesday neighborhood night and the best deal for a healthy bite at lunch every day.
We bake our bread and prep our fresh pasta and pizza daily. Beppe, Daniel and I want to say grazie to the Santa Cruz community for supporting us in the past 2 years. Allora, buon appetito!
Visit Luca and Beppe at Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue. That's Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue.
Did you know about the Santa Cruz Art League on Broadway in Santa Cruz? Founded in 1919, it's 96 years young and provides a wonderful gallery space for local and national artists. It's a great place to view art with 14 shows a year, and also to gain support if you're an artist yourself. There are art classes and weekend workshops, many taught by open studio artists. If you become a member, you receive a newsletter, discounts on classes, gifts and exhibit entries, images of your art on the Art League website, and guaranteed participation in the annual members show. It's also a great place to meet artists. Visit the Santa Cruz Art League at 562 Broadway or the website at scal.org. That's scal.org.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland. And I hope you're enjoying our conversations this week. I'm wondering if you're having any ideas about how you would have answered if I'd stopped you on the street. I'm hoping listening is getting your mind working. If you have any comments, you can email me, ruth@itsaquestionofbalance.com. I also wanted to let you know that Bookshop Santa Cruz has a great event coming up. They're delighted to be welcoming award-winning author Jonathan Franzen for a discussion and signing of his highly anticipated new novel, Purity. And this is a ticketed event, which is the launch of his book tour, and it will take place at Santa Cruz High School Auditorium on the 31st of August at 7 p.m. And Bookshop staffer Rico says, if there was still any doubt that Jonathan Franzen is the best living American novelist, this book crushes it. So real opportunity to see one of the greatest living novelists that we have, Jonathan Franzen. So again, that's the 31st of August at 7 p.m. You need to purchase tickets in advance at bookshopsantacruz.com or in the store. So again, 31st of August at 7 p.m, Jonathan Franzen. Well, we're going to go back to our conversations now. And lastly this week, I spoke to Stephen and Marilyn. So let's hear their thoughts.
Hello, my name's Ruth Copland from It's a Question of Balance radio show. Thanks for agreeing to being interviewed. What's your name?
Stephen Bosworth.
What is your name?
Marilyn Bosworth.
Well, thank you very much for stopping for our Out and About feature. This week we're looking at, are we medicalising normal? Obviously, you know, there's a need to help people with serious mental issues. But excluding that, there's a whole range of disorders that have been included now in the DSM, or the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, which is the book used by psychiatrists in America. When it was first published, there were 14 disorders, and now there are 250, so it's expanded rather. And a couple of, or several psychiatrists have come out and said that they really feel that psychiatry is stepping beyond the bounds of its competence. And I'm just wondering whether you have any sense of sort of medicalization of everyday human experience.
No.
No. So, areas where this is being seen is perhaps in, particularly with children. There's been a sort of almost an epidemic of mental disorder in children, with huge increased diagnoses of autism, attention deficit, childhood bipolar disorder, which this psychiatrist, Alan Francis, who was originally on the chair of the task force for the DSM-4, has said that it's just got out of control. Are you aware of more children being diagnosed with mental conditions?
Yes, and I think the giving of medicines and drugs to children has become far too prominent, really, and I don't understand why that's so, why they need drugs, and I think that could be a dangerous thing for a young child.
You think they should just wait and see when
I don't think they know exactly how to treat them, or whether in fact they have a disorder.
So you think, given the ignorance, then give them a drug?
Well, I think that's what happens, and I think you know, children who are hyperactive, say, maybe they could be a better way of dealing with that rather than a medicine.
Right.
Yeah, it used to be that you just cut out sugar or keratine.
Yeah. Even sugar was something quite late in our children's lives. Before that, you tried to do it with some other kind of...
Marianne and her children, what did they cut out with that very active child that we had?
Sugar and red colouring. Yes. And it did help. And he was actually a normal child. He was just very active. Our own daughter, in fact, and this is 46 years ago, when she was about 3, became extremely active, hard for us to handle in a way. And what we did, or what my husband did, was make a kind of
climbing frame in the garden.
frame and all sorts of old things.
And also my father bought a horse that was on springs. No, but it was because of he saw that she was very active and all she needed was exercise.
I think these climbing frames and bits of old iron that you'd made into vaults and really helped her. She, you know, she played for hours on that. Yeah. And then her behaviour was faded into normal. And
well, it was even normal then. It's just some children are very active and some people, some are not.
Yeah. So some children can't concentrate very well at school, but I think there must be other ways, there are ways to help those children and not to give them drugs.
Well, part of that, I think, is to do with the whole different kinds of minds thing. We have an education system that's exceptionally narrow in how it teaches children and how it expects them to demonstrate their knowledge. So if you have a different kind of mind that doesn't process particularly in a language-based way, then you're going to be pretty bored and distracted at school. And that's not a condition necessarily. That's you're being asked to do something that maybe 200 or 300 years ago you would have just done something very manual or active or gone out in the world discovering things or something,
you know. Or you would have more teachers, more money for teachers, so they would,
you'd
have...
Focus in on the uniqueness of each child.
Yes.
Right. And you teach in a different way, perhaps.
Yes. Yeah. Like the school that our grandchildren went to.
Yeah.
It wasn't Steiner, it was another kind of school.
Oh, yes.
And they had a much broader way of dealing with children.
Yeah. The DSM also creates a sort of tick box mentality, which can mean the uniqueness of each individual is overlooked. Helen Goldberg in Spiked states, as a result of various trends, including the impact of the DSMs, many human behaviours, quirks, eccentricities and woes, which in the past would have been seen as part of the rich tapestry of life, are now branded mental disorders. Do you think as a society we've become less tolerant of different ways of being? Or is this sense being driven by the medicalization of behaviors, do you think?
Children, you know, that's true. And
That they're not being tolerated, you mean the differences with children?
It sort of surprised me. I was thinking about this and I was thinking, you know, as a society, we seem to like outliers when they're successful. You know, there are many people who've succeeded in business and entertainment who, quite frankly, are not like most people. And we sort of applaud that. But it seems when it comes to the everyday, eccentricity is sort of less tolerated.
Children have to be labelled. I think it's a different... You have this broad spectrum of autism and Asperger's. At one end, very extreme autism is behaviour that is very hard to control. I understand that.
Yes.
Because we've had knowledge of that.
We have acquaintance.
But on the other extreme, those people seem very individual. They can succeed in life. They're just slightly different. And also they can be... be taught to concentrate more, I think. In social interaction can be helped.
Yeah.
But not if you start giving them drugs and saying they're different.
Right.
And as you say, many people who are different succeed far more individually in life. And
they're more creative.
And when you hear of very successful people, they might say, oh, I was terrible at school and I was expelled.
Right.
I didn't pass my exams.
Yeah.
But they have this amazing quirk that they were able to develop in some way.
Yes. One of the things that possibly is driving the diagnostic codes is the fact that in order to... be treated, you know, for your medical insurance to pay for your any treatment you might want, you have to have one of these DSM codes. And, you know, some people have questioned, you know, whether that and drug company influence is affecting how we're approaching these different behaviours. I mean, is that something that you've thought about at all?
Oh, yes. Because I'm British... And the system here is Well,
that's horrendous. I mean, I mean, the National Health Service is so good. I mean, okay, no matter what you go to, you'll go to get consultation. But on the other hand, the doctors will then judge whether it's necessary to do anything at all and advise you, no, just work with it, it'll be all right. Yeah, but if necessary, then he will be sent for a consultation and mental care.
Yeah, and I think here, you never know whether you're being properly diagnosed or whether...
Because of the money, the incentive.
Over-diagnosing you.
Yes.
And that, I find...
We've had a recent instance of that.
Yeah.
We went for a cardiac...
Let's not talk about
and,
that.
And the doctor was going to do too when the previous the surgeon was going to do both eyes even though the previous diagnostic doctor said there's only one, but he it seemed like okay, he was just going to say get twice the amount of fee, is there all they're doing two rather than one?
But when
you mentioned it, he said we'll just do one then, as if it was just an optional thing.
I mean, it is difficult to know. I mean, I think that's the problem with making health a business rather than a service, is people have a conflict of interest, and if you have your mortgage to pay, obviously people are trying to be ethical, but beyond a point, does it become blurred after a few years? Do you really know anymore?
There's the temptation.
I'm sure there are very many ethical doctors around, even in this society, there are, but there is that danger.
Where in the National Health Service in Britain, there's the incentive to minimize treatment, because actually they're all going to have to pay for it, so you're off for treatment only when it is seen necessary. You poo-poo the other sort of complaints, and then you say, no, it'll be all right.
Yeah.
Just wait and see, and we'll come back next week if the same problem is there, or something like that.
Over-medicalizing people has huge dangers in later life. I do know that as well. I think if you try to sort out your own problems until they become such that you can't, then you're...
Danger of stigmatizing people. They assume that your diagnosis is correct, where it may not be at all.
Yeah.
Well, no, I'm saying that if you take too many medicines throughout your life and drugs,
then
this is a build-up to when you're old, and when you find you're quite ill because of that. So there is, I think, over-med, and maybe in other countries as well, not just here.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the issues with anything to do with mental health generally is there is rather a stigma about it, and somebody else that I interviewed said, perhaps we could look at a more positive way of helping people to address and deal with symptoms of behavior that are perhaps being caused by anxiety or sadness or whatever, rather than sort of just plopping a name on it.
Yes.
On the other side, giving people a name for something sometimes maybe can be helpful to help get them to seek help, but...
Yeah. I think in some ways society is becoming more tolerant of difference.
Oh, you do?
Well, because of... gay people, gay marriage and so on is far more normal now, as so-called, and transgender people.
That's definitely more tolerant. Our societies are much more tolerant in that way.
One hopes that the other, mental health problems are also better tolerated. Yeah.
Because those were medicalized as well. We have to give them, either the strict treatment to knock the homosexuality out of them, or we have to give them drugs, or we have to castrate them, or whatever we have to do to stop
all,
it.
Yes, in my childhood, adults with mental health problems had electric shock treatment, which was a pretty terrible thing.
Yeah, but they do still do that.
Do they? And I'm not sure that they know much more about these things.
Well, I think that's what some of these psychiatrists have brought up, is that, in some ways, psychiatry is a pseudoscience in that
a lot of these things can't actually be proved. You can't say for sure someone has a chemical imbalance in their brain to this degree and therefore they should take this drug.
No.
A lot of it is guesswork. And therefore, but if it has this paternalistic weight to it, that you have someone telling you, yes, this is who you are, what you have, that, you know, maybe that's a bit disingenuous, I think, is what one of these psychiatrists is saying.
I'm glad there are psychiatrists that think that, really.
But of course, if some people are desperate and they're coming for help, they want some sort of someone to try to help. Now, okay, the trying to help may not actually be a help.
But in some cases it is.
And of course, we're talking about a spectrum, as we mentioned earlier. You know, some people have very severe issues that really do need to be addressed.
And they can be helped, I think.
Yeah.
It's just the other side, the sort of where we're not sure what they are or what they've got or whether you can help them. It's that.
And I think, you know, sometimes perhaps there's an impetus of giving up personal responsibility to something else. And if you feel like you can take a drug, that, you know, then that can, you
know. Well, if you're really desperate and you're unhappy, I mean, you're driven to it, aren't you?
Yes.
And you just hope that people, the doctors, don't take advantage of that.
Yeah.
It's the over-drugging thing that is more dangerous, because it seems to me a lot of things can be solved simply by giving intelligent attention to it.
Yeah.
Therapy, talk, reasoning, education. Help you being with someone who's been abandoned and feeling lonely.
Yeah.
A lot of things can be cured simply by human care, fellow love and consideration.
I mean, taking the time to spend with people, Well, thank you so much for your thoughts. I really appreciate it.
I enjoyed it. Nice to talk to you. Thank you. Good luck with your survey.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland. Thank you to all the people who took part in my On the Street conversations this week. Just wanted to remind you again about that special Bookshop Santa Cruz event with award-winning author Jonathan Franzen, the launch of his new novel Purity, August 31st at 7 p.m. You need to get tickets in advance from Bookshop Santa Cruz, either at their website, bookshopsantacruz.com, or in the store. Hopefully you can go along to that. And also to remind you, next up is my special arts guest, stand-up comedian and comedy writer Sadia Azmat, known for her forthright observational comedy about her experiences as a British Muslim woman and also cross-cultural issues about race and religion. I'm really looking forward to talking to her, so I hope you can stick around. I'll see you after the break.